Okay, here we go. A number of headlines. This, remember, there are about 330 million people in this country and about 8 million infections reported officially here. So that leaves about 320 million just waiting for a viral interlude. Study finds brain abnormalities are common in COVID-19 patients. This is from AOL. I think I ran that story the other day. Oh. White House advisors warn of unrelenting COVID-19 spread. Kind of echoes with what I just said. Now, here's one from blankhitthefan.com. All right? Blankhittheplan.com is how they do it. You know the site, I think. Mark Slabo wrote it. shtfplan.com. He says the mainstream media is preparing the public for another lockdown. The headlines declare that the third wave is here, and it's the worst one yet. These are news stories. The public is also responding with the fear needed to make sure another lockdown will be accepted by the people. Public is also responding with the fear, the amount of fear needed to make sure another massive lockdown will be accepted by the sheep. There will, with almost complete certainty, be another lockdown. These headlines are reminiscent of those back in February that were gearing us up for the first lockdown. There's a reason lockdowns are needed. People need to be economically desperate in order to accept the pittance that they will be offered by the central banks. You know about the digital dollars coming. You know about these stories, hundreds of them, about crypto-type economy. There are big things in the works. So that's part of that story. There's just much more. It's been a very busy week since Henry was on Monday. This is the weekend before the election, and Henry has already voted, so he's sitting back. He's cool. No problem. Henry, welcome back on this Friday night.
Well, it's good to be back, Jeff. There's been a lot of activity with or without cryptocurrency. Yeah. The virus really doesn't care about the politics or the currency or the machinations these conspiracies. The virus is taking off. It broke 100,000 today. So I mean, it's off.
Oh, you were right. You called that.
Well, there's a little asterisk. There were 8,000 cases reported out of Florida that were identified using the antibody tests, and they're done kind of batch-wise. So they're supposed to include both of those, but note, how they were identified. And they typically do them more batch-wise. So, there were they reported 13,000 cases today, and about 5,000 of them were the PCR tests that they do daily, and another 8,000 were the antibody tests. They don't report the antibody results on a regular basis, so they're kind of done batch-wise. So they were reported today, but even if you take the 8,000 out of the total, then you end up with 98,500, but there still is a little bit of time for a little bit more to come in out of California.
How many are infected and weren't tested? You broke the 100,000 easy.
Well, yeah. I mean that you broke. If you got to count the ones that weren't tested, you broke 100,000 a long time ago.
That's
so,
right.
These are just the ones reported by the state. And like I said, the numbers I've keep tabs on are the 50 states plus the District of Columbia. It doesn't include, you know, how many cases were at the VA hospitals or how many cases were in prisons or how many cases were on Indian reservations or U.S. territories. So there's you know, some tallies include those additional sources, and they add a little bit more. But these are just going to each of the states puts out a total on a daily basis. Usually a few of them don't report over the weekend. The only one that doesn't do it daily during the week is Kansas. They just do Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. But everybody else does the four weekdays, the 5 weekdays, and a few, half a dozen or so, don't do the weekend. Most of them don't do the weekend, don't do either day, and some don't do Saturday, and some don't do Sunday. So the numbers do always go down over the weekend, and then they kind of work their way up. And the trend is quite clear. You know, as I said, they usually Mondays are generally low because they're really, most of them are reporting Sunday results. So just to get the trend for this week, Monday, like I said, it's on the lower side, was 66,691. Then Tuesday it went up to 74,533. Then Wednesday it went up to 77,983. And then yesterday it went up to 88,458. And today, including those antibody ones, it's at 105,738. So it's, you know, if you want to take away the others, it's at 98.5. It'll probably be a little lower tomorrow because of Saturday, but next week it'll definitely get above 100,000 again. And others have been predicting that it would get up to 100,000, but most weren't predicting there was going to be up to 100,000 this week. You know, they thought that in the next several weeks it would get up to 100,000. But it literally went, I mean, a week ago, it did hit 80,000 on my tally. So it hit 80,000 on Friday and 80,000 on Saturday, and then it kind of dropped down because of the weekend and it worked its way back. But you know, I had said it would get up to 90,000 this week, and would probably get up to 100,000 by next week, and so it pretty much went past both 90 and 100,000. So the numbers are going up quite dramatically. The number of deaths is moved up to about 1,000 a day. Today I got 950. Yesterday I got 1,028. And the day before was 984. So, it's kind of up to the 1,000 a day level. Again, this particular wave is, started with younger people. So there's a little bit of a lag in the deaths. The younger people don't have as high a fatality rate. And the virus has to kind of go from the younger people to older contacts. They have to go in the hospital, then in the ICU, and then the death. So there's a lag of about a month or so. And so the deaths will start to go up. The latest projection is that by February 1st, the death toll will get up to 400,000. And, that's assuming that, you know, there'll be barely good usage of masks in that time frame. And if there isn't, good uses of masks, and then the projection is that it'll tap 500,000 by February 1st. So there's another earlier estimate that we get up to 500,000 by the end of February. But now they're saying, especially if the mask usage doesn't hold up, then it would get up to 500,000 by the beginning of February. And beginning of February is not when it's going to start going down. Yeah, you know? So that's when it's going to, or that's not when it's going to end. You know, that's probably when it's going to peak. So I mean, it might start going down, but it's not going to get that low until
you use the word wave. Wave. This is getting to be confusing for people. Third wave.
Yeah,
second
I know.
Wave. What is? Are these just surges coming off after the Herald wave? What are we looking at?
Well, it's confusing because the policy at the U.S. in the U.S. is so bad that there's extra waves that normally don't even show up, but. Europe is more typical that there's a spring wave, which is the Herald wave, which is the virus, you know, adapting to humans and it's kind of sporadic. And then, that wave usually is fairly controllable because it doesn't get that high. And then the number drops down, and then it kind of comes back even stronger in the fall. And so there's usually a Herald wave in the spring and then a much larger wave in the fall. The U.S., was kind of an abysmal response. And so the U.S. had the spring wave, and then the CDC came out with guidelines how to get it under control. And there were the lockdown measures and there were the recommendations for masks and social distancing. And many of the states, particularly those in the South, kind of disregarded the guidelines. So they basically started with a lockdown, and then Trump, if you recall, went out to Arizona and he says, oh, you guys don't need to keep this lockdown on. It's time to loosen things up. And they loosened things up, and the virus took off. And so things got real bad in Arizona. And then other governors, Georgia and Florida, they kind of followed suit. You know, that Trump didn't have to tell them directly. He told one governor, and that governor hopped to and opened everything up, and then the other ones just started saying, well, we're going to do the same thing. Actually, Trump even complained about Georgia. He said, oh, they're doing a little bit too fast because they kind of did it on their own. But as a result, instead of having the one wave in the spring, the U.S. had a second wave in the summer. And so, you know, if you graph these things out, you can see the waves. So, the graphs are just showing, you know, you can see in whatever endpoint you're using, but the simplest one is just to do cases. And you can see the numbers going up in the spring and then dropping down. But they didn't go to baseline. They only went to about 20,000 or so per day. And then they went back up again and got all the way up to 60,000. And then they didn't drop down that far again. They dropped down to about 40,000. And now the fall wave is starting, and it's starting from a very high level. It's starting from 40,000, and now it's up to 100,000. So it started moving up maybe a month ago or so. You could start to see the trend. And then it started taking off, really, in the last couple of weeks. So in the last couple of weeks, it started going up much more dramatically. And the difference between the fall wave and spring and summer waves, you know, which were really kind of both the Herald wave, because they were somewhat localized geographically. There was a limited number of large cities in the spring, and then it was mostly southern states in the summer. And now, unfortunately, but very predictably, it's all over the place. So the numbers are very high. And just to give you an idea what the what it looks like when there's 100,000 cases, here, I'll just read through the ones that had at least 2,000. There were 18 states that had 2,000 or more cases today. And then there were another 18 states that had 1,000 to 2,000 today. And then there were just 14 states that had less than 1,000. But here's the 2,000 one. And these are kind of in the order that they were originally, way back in the spring wave. New York had 2,255. Pennsylvania was 2,641. California was 4,629. Michigan was 3,345. Illinois had 8,489. Florida had 13,809, which includes those 8,000 by the antibody test. Texas had 6,631. Ohio had 3,845. Indiana had 3,163. Colorado had 2,412. Tennessee had 2,608. North Carolina had 2,809. Missouri had 2,794. Wisconsin had 5,096. Utah had 2,292. Iowa had 2,428. Minnesota had 3,154. Kansas had 3,136. And that's it for the 18 that were 2,000 and above. So you can tell from that listing that they're fairly geographically dispersed, okay. And they go from 2,000 something all the way up to, I mean, if you threw out the 8,000 in Florida, the highest actually was Illinois. Illinois had 8,000 cases today, which is a high for them. And similarly, Wisconsin had over 5,000 today. So those were some of the higher ones. But the numbers are just kind of steadily rising here, and so the fact that you take out those 8,000, it got up to 98,500 today. it's definitely going to go over 100,000 next week. And it could very well go quite a bit over 100,000. I mean, that was kind of the magic number that, various commentators and analysts were using. They said, it's up to 80,000. It could get up to 100,000. And a couple days later, it was at 100,000. But there's really nothing to indicate that 100,000 is the top, because it just got started. And holidays are coming up. There are already recommendations that families limit it to kind of nuclear families and not do multi-generational events, that these events are the types of gatherings that end up transmitting the virus, and you get multiple generations in the same house, then you're liable to pass it to older, more susceptible relatives, and then there's usually some travel involved, and so then they kind of bring the virus from multiple locations to one location, and then they spread it back out to multiple locations. Now, the from the Thanksgiving standpoint, there's a potential of spread because there's a lot of small events. But unfortunately, right now, Trump is actually doing a limited number of large events. And, there have been concerns, and he doesn't seem to quite figure out that when he holds these rallies, he loses votes because the seniors see these rallies. They know he's spreading the virus. There's been, documentation. I mean, Herman Cain's already dead, and that was from way back in Tulsa. But the more recent outbreaks have resulted in additional clusters of cases that continue to spread. And today it was brought up, and Trump says, "Oh, we do them outside." Well, outside is definitely better than inside. But if you look at the rallies, they're literally shoulder to shoulder. The people are packed in. They're generally in a stationary location for several hours. Mask usage is minimal. Most of those with masks are those that are behind the stage. They're given the mask by the organizers, and they're told to wear the mask because they're going to be on camera. And so they want to show that they're being responsible, and people are wearing masks behind the president. But, the rally that he just had in Tampa, they weren't even wearing the mask behind the stage. There were very, very few masks there. And, these rallies, they have 5,000, 10,000, 20,000 people. They're usually at airfields, so they could spread them out if they wanted to, but they don't want to because they want pictures that show these crowds. So they want.
Does this suggest that the Biden-Harris people are staying away from rallies because they're more aware of potential spreading of virus? Because they're drawing a dozen people or a couple of hundred people. There's just no crowds.
They're not. They do it in automobiles. They tell people to stay in or near their automobiles so they
in
don't
their cars.
In their cars. And so sometimes they're outside of the cars a little bit. They're not looking for big crowds. I mean, this isn't the time to be encouraging people to form crowds.
That's what I asked. I mean, is there somebody thinking about this and saying, hey, let's not encourage the big crowds? And maybe some of the big crowds are saying, hey, let's not get together and potentially spread this virus. Maybe a different attitude. Well, I don't know.
Well, yeah, it's a very bit different attitude. If you listen to Trump's speeches, he downplays the virus. He's pretending that, these numbers that I just gave you, they have 100,000 cases in one day,
right,
and 1,000 deaths. He pretends it doesn't exist. His son was just on Fox News saying, well, they don't really talk about the deaths that much because, they're down to next to nothing.
Who said this? Trump Jr. or Eric?
Jr.
Huh.
He was on Fox last night, it's fairly widely available. I mean, it was quite a striking comment. He said, "Oh, I got the graph going, then they're next to nothing." Is the exact words that he used to describe 1,000 deaths. And, 1,000 deaths, that's kind of, in 3 days, you got 9/11. There were 3,000. And then to give an example, Trump goes and says, well, you know, all they do is talk about COVID, 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 COVID. You know, if there was an airplane crash and 500 people died, they wouldn't even cover it. And it's kind of like, well, you know, there aren't that many airplane crashes anymore. And, yeah, I think if 500 people died in an airplane crash, it definitely would get covered. I mean, it'd be breaking news and be covered by everybody.
Of course.
Because there really aren't that many crashes, and 500 people are a lot for a given crash. And
that's a two-plane crash. Usually,
right.
A collision.
But that's what's happening every day now. There's 1,000. I mean, when I said it, there was 1,000 people today, it wasn't that there were 1,000 a day, and you know there were 100 yesterday. There were 1,000 yesterday, and there was 1,000 the day before. And the projections is it's going to go up to 3,000. So there's going to be 3,000 people dying a day. And that's the magnitude of the deaths. So they're not talking about 500,000 people in the next year. They're talking about 500,000 people by February 1st. So they're talking about just in the next 3 months, 500,000. So the
can we bring people also, I'd like to, before we lose the rest of our time, I want to bring people up to date on the sweepstakes for the vaccine or an antiviral. There's another little bit of talk about a new antiviral approach. We've got to be making some progress pharmaceutically. I don't know about phase three, yeah. But this is a big deal.
Right.
What do you know?
Well, there's several different, I think that worldwide, I think that the number of clinical trials for a vaccine is something like 55. So there's 55
Jeez.
Different clinical trials. And the U.S. has, I think, 9. And of those 9, I think it's something like 5 that are in phase 3, which is the final phase. Now, just to give you an idea on why there isn't a vaccine yet, the way these trials are structured, they're double blind. So, either half of the, participants get the vaccine and half get a placebo. Or some of them are 2-to-1, so 2/3 get the vaccine and 1/3 get the placebo. But they're blind, so they don't know who gets what. And they won't even look at the data until they have, I believe, 25 outcomes. So they have to have 25 people that have already received, are fully vaccinated. In the case of some of these, means they have 2 injections, which are 3 to 4 weeks apart. And so for them to be fully immunized under those circumstances, it takes close to 2 months. You know, it's about 6 weeks before they would be in the vaccinated category. And then they need 25 people that basically have COVID. And then once they got 25 people, then they can basically break the code and see, you know, how many of those 25 got the vaccine and how many of those 25 got the placebo. And then they compare those two groups. So
right.
Even though they talk about enrolling 30,000 people, they're really basing their decision on, you know, literally a handful and a couple handfuls, you know, 2 dozen, you know, that's really how many outcomes they have. And it takes a little while to get that many outcomes, in part because, you know, it takes a couple of months just for them to be vaccinated. And so when they start the phase three trials, like a month ago or so, it's probably getting close to 2 months. You know, most of the people haven't gotten their full course, or they've got the second shot, but they haven't, right. Haven't really developed full immunity. And then after that, they have to basically get infected, and they have to have, you know, they probably want to see how serious they are. So they don't just want a PCR positive. They want to know, well, this is this mild, or is this severe, or is this fatal? And so it takes, you know, several months just to even get a handful of patients so that you can get an idea of, whether the vaccine's working or not. And then when they have these adverse effects, which has happened in several of the trials now, they basically have to halt the trial to figure out if the adverse effect is from the vaccine side or if it's on the placebo side. And then if it's on the vaccine side, then they need to figure out, well, is it because of the vaccine? Is this, you know, when did they get the symptoms? Has somebody else had these symptoms before? And like I said, the myelitis has happened a few times now. Yeah, you know, they kind of hedge and say, well, we don't know for sure.
Was the AstraZeneca patient who died, Henry, excuse me, also involved with the myelitis issue, or was that just the other two? Do we know?
No, the death was a stroke. Yeah, all of these things are things that are associated with the disease and could conceivably be associated with the vaccine, kind of, you know, with the spike protein. But they did resume that. So the bottom line is that I don't think they've broken the code on any of these trials yet, but they're probably getting close to getting these 25. And then the question is, well, if you got 25, you know, how clear cut is it? You know, if it's basically, you know, out of those 25, you know, 20 got the placebo and 5 got the vaccine. Well, that's in the right direction, but that's a little bit borderline, you know. And
I would think.
Close, yeah. And then if it's close, so if it's borderline, they're going to want to get their numbers up. So they might say, well, you know, we can't say for sure. We should get another 25. When we got 25 more, we'll break that code. Then we'll have 50. And see if the second 25 kind of gave the same results as the first 25. And so if you got 50 and 40 of them got the placebo and 10 of them got the vaccine, then they say, well, now it looks like it's working. It's, you know, not at 100%, but it's definitely having a beneficial effect, assuming none of these people are developing adverse responses along the line. So there's a lot that are in the works. I mean, Fauci has said that he thought that they would have one available by the end of November, the beginning, you know, the end of the year or so. So it sounds like it's, you know, 1 to 2 months away before you have that type of result and it's relatively conclusive. But then you have to realize that once you've got to that level, then it's going to take, if it's the version that takes 2 shots, then it's going to take about 2 months before those people are immunized. So if they start with people at the highest risk or the first responders, and they start vaccinating them like at the beginning of the year, then it's probably not going to be until the beginning of March or so, or end of February, before those people are are vaccinated. And so that's quite a bit into this this wave that's starting right now, and no telling when it's going to peak. And then there's just the well here are the confounding factors. There's some rumors that that there's no real budget for distributing the vaccine. So even though the government has gone and made a whole bunch of doses, as far as getting the vaccine distributed to wherever they're going to be.
Do they all have to be kept at that certain 70 degrees below, or is that just some of them?
Just some of them. The ones that are like Moderna, the ones that are basically have this lipid kind of like structure that's got the cassette that expresses the spike protein inside it. That one needs to be at, I think is at it's either minus 70 or minus 80 degrees centigrade. I think it's minus 70.
I think so.
And so they need, you know, special freezers that'll take it down to that level and then distribute it. And, you know, the flu vaccine, you know, a lot of that is just done by supermarkets or pharmacies, I should say. And, you know, most of the pharmacies probably don't have those freezers, so whether they've kind of planned ahead and now do have them, and that part is handled. But it's not clear that there's funding to actually get the vaccine distributed. I mean, A, you got to get into the locations, and B, you have to have somebody that administers it, and even before that, you have to have some mechanism of prioritizing, because it's going to be in short supply. So I don't know if the first round even goes to pharmacies, or if it really is going more to hospitals and being administered to first responders and the general population. You know, is going to be fairly limited. So that's one of the problems. And then the other problem, of course, which was one that wasn't that hard to anticipate, but there's rumors that there are shortages already. There's shortages in gloves, and I think there's shortages in masks, and there's, you know, a limited number of N95 masks. And there's a limited number of
after nearly
gloves.
A year, there's still a limited number of keys.
The numbers I heard was that the plan was to have 3 months worth of supply of gloves,
right?
And in the stockpile, and they've got 2 weeks. You know, so they're nowhere near the levels that they were going to stockpile for another wave. And of course, Trump denies that there is another wave. I mean, he's still saying rounding the curve. I mean, in all of his rallies, he says, "Oh, we're rounding the curve." Mm-hmm. And so I don't know how well they planned for a large fall wave. You know, they might have planned for a return, but how big this wave is going to be is a little bit unclear. And Trump's even in denial that the deaths are due to COVID. I mean, if you listen to his, I mean, he's saying this today that, the hospitals, they're just calling everything COVID because they get a higher reimbursement. So he didn't say the hospitals actually, he said the doctors. So he's saying that the doctors are saying that everybody's dying from COVID when they're not, but they make more money. for their reimbursement because it costs more money to take care of a COVID case with pneumonia than bacterial or other pneumonias like flu.
Right.
And by claiming that they're COVID when they're not, then they just do that for more money. Now that's just nonsense because they have to document this. I mean, if they're going to go and get reimbursed for a COVID case, the case has to be positive on a COVID test. I mean, they say, well, it looks like COVID. Yeah, they have to document these things. So that's just, you know, one of many just flat out lies.
Okay. We got two more things, right? I got to get to. One.
Okay.
We have always paid special attention to unusual aspects of this COVID-19 because of the polybasic cleavage site. In other words, it can attack all the major organ system cells in the body, not just the bronchial pulmonary type cells. Okay, so that's a problem.
Right.
Here's a story out of AOL. Excuse me. Study finds brain abnormalities are common in COVID-19 patients. Let me just do a little bit here. A new study is shedding light on da-da-da-da-da. Researchers at Baylor College of Medicine reviewed 84 studies involving more than 600 patients who had been diagnosed with COVID-19. The median age was 61, and two-thirds of the patients were men, while one-third female. The study's authors examined the results, electroencephalograms, and found that brain abnormalities in COVID-19 patients were common. I don't have enough time to read this to find out what the abnormalities are, but I don't know if this extends beyond the resolution time of their infection with the virus or just during the time of the infection. What do you know? Any of that?
I don't know for sure, but I would think that it covers both, that they can, viruses can be neurotropic with the polybasic cleavage site that would increase the likelihood. And a lot of these, seem to be long lasting or certainly lasting beyond, discharge. So people are discharged. They don't have the virus.
That's my understanding.
Feel
yes.
somewhat better, but you know, on examination, they can find evidence of this. I mean, this goes all the way back to that family in Guangdong Province back in January, where their parents insisted, and they insisted that they do an MRI on the. The one child who didn't have any symptoms.
Well, the one kid wasn't showing any symptoms.
Right. And they took a look at lungs, and they saw lung damage. And a lot of these patients, they get discharged when they do a follow-up and they look at their lungs, they have scarring in the lungs. And so, yeah, it's not well documented, you know, how long these abnormalities persist, but I don't think the disease has been around long enough to say a whole lot beyond a few months or so. So this is all kind of a black box still, and that is one of the issues. That's part of the reason why Tony Fauci said, "Well, don't just look at how many are dying. You know, the fact that they get discharged from the hospital
we've been following
that they're totally recovered."
That aspect from the beginning. Here's a little bit of a... this isn't the first study to look at how COVID-19 affects the brain. In a previous study published in the journal Brain, Behavior, and Immunity in July 2020, MRIs revealed, quote, white matter brain abnormalities, end quote, such as, quote, small bleeds and strokes, end quote, in COVID-19 patients. Now, that's a concern. These small strokes, of course, can be associated with brain damage and even seizures. Now, does this mean that the blood is thickening like we know it does in many cases, and they should be given blood thinners?
Yeah, that's been an ongoing issue. I mean, that's an issue with when they're still in the hospital, that the blood clots and jams up the machinery that's circulating the blood. So clotting problems has been widely reported as issues with these infections. And you know, these strokes, you know, I mentioned when the patients first started coming in, the doctors, you know, would do EKGs and say, it looks like they're having a heart attack. And right. You know, the response was, oh, that's what COVID cases look like. You know, these types of clotting issues, you know, if they're having these clotting issues in the brain, the blood that's going to the brain, then you'll have something like strokes. So if you have it in the heart, you'll have something like heart attacks. And if you have these little strokes all over the place, then you have clotting all over the place. And then you have those issues of, you know, what these mini clots are going to do and how easy it is to clear them out. And they're well aware of this as far as, blood thinners and those types, you know, various treatments. And I'm not an MD. I'm not sure how much they're on these and how they handle these things. But I know that those are characteristics, and so they could, you know, affect several different organs.
Okay, here's the other one.
Heart and brain just from clotting.
All right, this is important. Where I live in Southern Oregon, there have been many cases of something that almost is a direct match and an overlay, a template of the COVID-19 symptomology. But it's not, because every single person reporting in with this flu-like syndrome is COVID-19 negative. They haven't had a single positive. And there have been a lot of people with this. They really get sick as hell, fever for several days, coughing. Bad coughing. And then it goes away. The doctor told somebody I know that you have antibodies to a virus, but they're not the antibodies to the coronavirus. So they're not going to help you with coronavirus. You don't want to get coronavirus. It's not good, especially if you've had this. This is running all over the place. And my question is this the beginning of flu season and they just don't know?
Well, flu's pretty easy to diagnose. So, you know,
this doctor couldn't say it was flu. He didn't say it was flu. He said it's some other virus. That's what he said.
Well, that's usually an indication that it isn't, because you know, the rapid test has a fairly high false negative rate, like 30-40% or so. But you know, if you got a whole bunch of people, you'd still 60% of them would be positive for flu, and you'd say that there's a flu outbreak now. It's starting to get into flu season, and the number of flu cases are gonna go up. But usually,
could this be a coronavirus mutation?
They can do a PCR.
Okay, could this be a coronavirus mutation that is somehow evading detection as a coronavirus mutation?
No, very very unlikely. I don't know. Your description is a little confusing. I mean, if they say they've got antibodies, then you can do an antibody test to find out what the antibody is directed against.
And so if there's a mutation,
that wouldn't. I mean, some of the antibodies might not react well, but other ones would. So if you have antibodies to a coronavirus, even if it's to a mutated coronavirus, it would still show up in an antibody test. And by the
as
same
a coronavirus.
Right. And if it's a mutation of SARS-CoV-2, then again, when you do a PCR test, it's to multiple different regions. And even if one of them is negative, the others can be positive. And they say, well, you know, it's not quite as strong a positive as we expect. We expected, you know, we did three tests and we thought all three would normally be positive, but only two are positive on this. Then, you know, they say, well, maybe there's a mutation in the third one, and so that one's given a false negative because the sequence has changed a little bit.
Got it.
But I would doubt it. I would doubt that it's flu or coronavirus, because those would be the two most obvious tests that would be run, and it sounds like mm-hmm. they're negative for those. So I would think it's probably another respiratory, you know, virus, especially if it kind of clears up by itself. I mean, that's what happens this time of year. I mean, once you get into flu season, there's a lot more flu, and flu's more likely to send you to the hospital than some other upper respiratory tract infection. But the upper respiratory tract infection is, you know, something that'll give you symptoms, and you'll say, I've got something, and, you know, maybe they're strong enough, they'll send you to the doctor. But if they don't really have a test for that particular virus, then they say, well, I don't know, it looks like it's viral, but I don't know what virus it is.
Okay. Very helpful. All right. Henry, thank you very much for being here, as always. Have a good weekend. Big week coming up, and we'll talk to you soon. And thanks to all of you for being here.
Okay.
Enjoy. Okay, good night, Henry. All right. Back Monday, and we'll be with you all weekend, of course, at the site. So hang in there. Talk soon.